It's time for JT the Brick.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
What they did in the first half, down 24-0 to take the lead, was one for the ages.
First down, Mahomes. McCoy in the backfield. They're going to throw it deep. Near side, Kelce. Caught around. Caught it. Touchdown!
I don't know how you stop Kansas City.
I think the Chiefs win. They're in the prime of it. They need to win these games.
Kansas City, I give you a lot of credit.
Whenever I got here, I mean, the goal was to win the AFC Championship and obviously get to the Super Bowl and win that.
JT the Brick.
Tennessee's got some mojo going.
For the first time in 17 years, to the American Football Conference Championship game.
That was a signature defining win for the Titans.
Give Henry at left guard, second effort. Henry, touchdown, Titans!
And Derrick Henry, really a throwback. Derrick Henry looks like Earl Campbell playing in the prime of his career.
Ryan Tannehill has led the Titans to a victory.
I don't know how you're going to pick that game.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT with you. Good to have you. Hope you had a great weekend. And we are here brought to you by PT's, home of the pigskin and puck specials. $3 classic Nathan hot dogs. $5 chicken and waffle bites. $7 pizza box nachos. And how about those drink specials? $3 Bud Light bottles. $3 Michelob Ultra bottles and the $5 Mango carts. We're ready. We're ready to roll this week. All brought to you by PT's. And remember, Saturday, January 18th, UFC 246 McGregor versus Cowboy. That's at PT's Ranch, Blue Diamond and Lindell. Get on out for that. Only a $10 cover charge on that Saturday night. A big event to see Conor McGregor come back. Exclusively at their partners, PT's Ranch, on Blue Diamond in Lindell. Lot to get to today. This is one of my favorite nights of the year to be on the radio. I have 2 hours here that I'm on nationally on Sirius XM for the national championship game. I've been doing this my entire career. For whatever reason, these games come on a Monday night. They're on, they're exciting, and I get to talk about it and feel like I'm doing the play-by-play. Clemson versus LSU. Both teams are 14-0. Clemson has not lost in 2 years under Trevor Lawrence, and Joe Burrow of LSU had arguably the greatest season in the history of college football, which is pretty unique when you think about the history of college football, how this kid who transferred and came to LSU is now throwing over 50 touchdowns and could have the greatest year in the history of college football for one season. This is a monster heavyweight game. No flukes here. No one snuck in. No one got in via the back door. This is drop everything that you're doing and watch this game. Make this a priority. It's a three-day weekend. It's in New Orleans where Baton Rouge is 50 miles away. It feels like it's a home game for LSU and Clemson. If they win this game, 3 out of the last 4 national championships, this will be the beginning and cementing them officially as a dynasty, even in the Nick Saban era. Think about that for a second. All the success that Nick Saban's had, that there could be a dynasty while Nick Saban is putting together all these great teams with all of these NFL players. Cannot wait for this game as we get going out of the gate. Last I looked up, the Golden Knights lost again. We have a problem. This team now is reeling in a way that needs to be fixed quickly. The Golden Knights now, we do not know what we're getting. They're barely a 500 team at home. Their home ice advantage has been wiped out in the NHL. It's no longer a home ice advantage that makes everybody fear about coming in. And too bad. That's just the way it is. So what is it going to take for this franchise to get good? There's two options. We all know what they are. Leave it alone. Let them figure it out on their own. Let them peak for the playoffs and go on this Stanley Cup run. The second thing is do something drastic because they're up against the salary cap and they just can't add a superstar player. Is they're going to have to move someone. They're going to have to move a recognizable player to make room for a scoring defenseman to come in and help out this team in the postseason. It's one or the other. Whatever you want to do, I'm fine with. But I was wrong. I thought that this was one of the top three teams in all of hockey and a team that was going to win the cup. Now I'm concerned that they won't make the playoffs. I think they will, but I'm deeply concerned that they won't make the playoffs and they will get tracked down from behind and maybe miss the playoffs by a point or two. That's the way this is trending. Hopefully they turn it around. I'm hopeful that they will. And I think the road trip, you know it's bad. You know it's really bad when the coach and every player in the locker room is saying, maybe we need to get out of here for a while. Maybe we're too comfortable at home. Really? That's the excuse? That we're too comfortable at home. We've been here too long. We need to get out on the road and do some bonding because there's not much to do. And what they mean by that is simple. Is that the team, when they're home, they don't stay in hotels. They stay at their homes. When they're on the road, they're in a hotel together. They eat together. They practice together. They do everything. They come back to the hotel, and they're hanging out together. They don't do that when they're home, playing in Vegas for weeks on end, and they have wives and girlfriends and kids and personal appearances and all of that. So when they leave City National after their workout, before they show up at T-Mobile, it's not like they're embedded together like they are on the road. Whatever you think is going to get this team going again, love to hear from you at 876-1340. Let's jump into the NFL and what happened during the divisional round of the postseason. I thought the games on Saturday and Sunday were absolutely outstanding, and they always are. Usually this time of year, you get the best football, the best coaches, the best players, and they're trying to get to the Super Bowl, so there's so much pressure. And that's really the backstory of this monologue, is the pressure that these teams are under to get out of the gate and win. We begin with the 49ers, and I thought the Niners looked unbelievable in their win at home against the Vikings by a score of 27-10. Give Jimmy Garoppolo credit. He was cool. He was calm. He got off to a good start and got in an early rhythm.
Here's Jimmy Garoppolo, first and goal, 3-yard line. Fakes the gun run, throws, and is caught by Kendrick Bourne. Touchdown! San Francisco!
That feels great, baby!
Niners off to a good start on Niners Radio. Here's the key with the Niners. The Niners had a bye week, and they didn't look like they had a bye week. They looked like they were playing together. Their execution by drawing up the first 15 plays, they executed all of them. They were fast, they were furious, but they weren't out of sync like Baltimore was. I'll get to Baltimore later. Baltimore was fast, but they were out of sync early. One thing about the Niners, they're incredible because everybody's playing, it seems like, at a Pro Bowl level. Richard Sherman on defense leading the Niners.
Third down and nine. Here comes the gold rush. Cousins back, throws out right. Intercepted by Richard Sherman. And Sherman will take it back inside the 30-yard line. Dropped on the Minnesota 28-yard line. Your best players are playing their best right now.
Absolutely. That is what Sherman says all the time. Sherman feels great about the way he's playing this time of year. And the Niners easily win and put down the Vikings 27-10 to advance to the NFC Championship.
Jimmy Garoppolo will take the snap. From Ben Garland, take a right knee, left knee, and Richie James will stick it.
Oh, man.
A perfect 10. And that's how many points the Minnesota Vikings scored today. Only 10, and they were lucky to get those 10.
Hey, Pop, you like that?
I like that.
Feels great, baby.
Actually, I don't like that. Feels great, baby.
What a game. What a game.
Niners Radio on the call. So the Niners were very impressive. They have a dormant fan base. They have a massive fan base that's been dormant for almost a decade, especially moving into Levi Stadium. They are back. The bandwagon is filling up in Northern California for the 49ers and their fans. They feel like they've arrived again, and they can flip the switch with their fan base. Those fan base that is in Hawaii, all over the country, they rally for this team, and they're rallying again. For Jimmy Garoppolo, he gave credit. He didn't have a super elite game, but he gave the credit to his defense that showed up and played electric.
That was huge, yeah. I didn't actually get to see it. Made the play. It's that complimentary football that I've said it before up here, but that one, I mean, coming off the special teams one with Raheem, when he got that one too, it was just all three units are playing together like that. It makes it tough to beat.
Niners look like the best team in football. They have for quite some time. They're battle-tested with their schedule. They're in the NFC West with Seattle and the Rams in the regular season. They really struggled in both games against Arizona with Kyler Murray, and the Niners destroyed the Packers, destroyed them in the regular season, and they get them at home next Sunday in the NFC Championship game. We move to the Titans at the Ravens, and the NFL world was shocked by the outcome of this game. You've got to be kidding me that the Ravens, who had a bye week, and I got that one right, I was tweeting and I put the tweet out again. Yes, Bobby, I know you're shaking your head. I'm right on that. I said, if you're not going to play Lamar Jackson from December 22nd all the way to January 11th or 12th at the time, you're making a mistake. Not because he's not a great player, because he needs to stay in rhythm. And he wasn't in rhythm. Look, he put up 500 total yards. It didn't matter. He wasn't ready. He wasn't locked in the first quarter of that game. And that's when the game got away from them. I'll tell you this. This Derrick Henry is a beast. Not only could he run it, he could throw it. He threw a touchdown at the goal line.
Titans in the pistol. Mariota. Now he goes in motion. Direct snap. Derrick Henry throws it. Jump pass in the end zone. Touchdown, Titans! Henry to Corey Davis. Oh, my goodness. That play is from the 1800s.
Titans radio on the call. They got a running back who's running downhill. They have a fierce offensive line, a nasty defensive front. They're big. They're well-coached. They're doing everything right. Very impressive to watch the performance of the Tennessee Titans. And for Mike Vrabel, got to give him credit. Comes from that Belichick tree as a former player. He had the perfect game plan for the defense to get the stops and get Lamar Jackson off the field.
I thought that the players understood the scheme, some of the keys of trying to stop him. And you saw where he gained yards. They were getting him in between the hashes and the numbers. And when we defended from number to number and made him go laterally, they weren't big plays. And then we were able to get some stops. And it could have been a lot better if we were able to, you know, get him off the field on some of those third and long situations. But we didn't. And we played great red zone defense.
You got a feel for John Harbaugh, the coach of the Ravens, because he did everything right. He coached the team up. They had the right game plan. But he's going to be questioned for the rest of his career for shutting down his starters heading into the bye week and for them not being ready to start that game.
I think it's unanswerable. I thought our guys practiced really hard, did the best they could, but we didn't play a sharp football game for sure. What you attribute that to, I guess you can theorize on a lot of different things.
I'll do it for you. They didn't play a good game because they weren't ready to play. They weren't ready to play because they had too much time off. And that offense, once that offense gets behind, they become pass predictable. And Lamar Jackson is not Patrick Mahomes. He can't carry a team with his arm. He can run a team back into a game. And what a year Lamar Jackson had. You're not going to hear me say anything negative about him. Nothing negative about Lamar Jackson. He had an MVP year. He was fabulous. They just got caught by a team that was peaking with a running back in Derrick Henry that no one seems to be able to stop. Congratulations to the Titans for advancing. For Lamar Jackson, a lot of people are going to be chirping over the next couple of years when he gets to the playoffs again, if he can win the big one.
No, I don't really care about what they're saying. You know, this is my second year in the league. Many people don't be able to make it to the playoffs. I got a great team with me. We ain't really worried about what the people saying. We just going to keep going. Like I said, get ready for next year.
He'll be ready. He'll be ready to go. He's a hell of a player. Congratulations to him. He'll get the MVP award at the NFL Honors, and he deserves that. We then move on to the Houston Texans versus Kansas City Chiefs game, which I will tell you again that this was the greatest first half comeback of my life as a football fan. Not the greatest comeback of all time. That was Buffalo against Warren Moon and the Houston Oilers back in the day. The second greatest comeback of all time was Tom Brady and the Patriots in the Super Bowl down 28-3 to the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl. This, I would put number one all time in one half that I've ever seen. I don't think there's been a team that was down that much and was able to rally and come back and win a game and win it by the end of the first half. This team was boat raced early, down 24-0. It was getting away from them. They didn't know what hit them. Houston came out and punched them in the mouth. Deshaun Watson in the 21-point lead.
On second and goal, Watson puts the leg down. Here's the snap. Deshaun to throw over the middle. Got a man. Fells. Touchdown, Houston. Up 3 TDs to nothing.
Oh, my.
21-0. Then the biggest decision so far in this young year in the NFL playoffs happened. Where up 24-0, they decided to do something that I couldn't believe and I still can't believe it. They were in a position when they were up big for a fake punt. The Texans decided in their own section of the field for a fake punt with 8 minutes to go in this game. I've never seen anything like it because they were in complete control of the game. The only way Kansas City could get back in the game was with a monumental momentum shift, and this is how it sounded.
8:32 to go, second quarter. That's a fake punt. They fake the right side, and it's tackled short of the first down. Great play. Dirty Dan Sorensen would not be fooled. A gain of 2 on third down and 4. Dirty Dan makes the big play.
All I want to ask you here, and I'd love to hear from you about this, why would you fake a punt with 8:33 left to go in the second quarter when you're up 24-7? Why would you even consider doing something like that to give another team the opportunity to get in? Now, if you would say the right answer was because they wanted to bury them, then earlier the drive before, when they were up 21-0, they settled for a field goal instead of on fourth and inches going for a first down. So it made no sense to me, and that's the beginning of the end for the Houston Texans as Kansas City started to storm back in this game, and Patrick Mahomes was locking in with Kelce.
Mahomes takes the snap, steps up, being pressured, fires it late, caught, Kelce dives, touchdown! Kansas City on the near side! The Kansas City Chiefs have scored two touchdowns in a span of 2 minutes and 49 seconds!
Thanks to Bill O'Brien, Kansas City was back in the game, and it was over. They annihilated the Texans, and I blame Deshaun Watson, who couldn't stop the bleeding as the quarterback for the Houston Texans. Kansas City's getting on a roll. The quarterback of Houston has got to go out there instead of putting on his jacket and his hat and looking like he's freezing cold. He's got to find a way to match the intensity of Patrick Mahomes, and he just wasn't able to do it. Here's the last touchdown here when this game was completely out of control and Patrick Mahomes had one of the greatest performances I've ever seen in the playoffs.
First down, goal to go for the Chiefs, leading 41-31. Play action fake, left side throw, touchdown Kansas City! Blake Bell has never had a touchdown in his five-year NFL career, either in the regular season. This is his first postseason game.
That's crazy. Kansas City radio on the call. So a blowout of 51-31. If you bet on that game and you laid 9.5 points and you had Kansas City and they were down at 1 point 24-0, you had to think your bet was dead. A lot of people are now popping up saying, no, that wasn't the case. I always thought they'd come back. Give me a break. Anybody who watches football knows that a lead like that by professional football players should be enough. After the game, Bill O'Brien taking a lot of heat for that fake punt and what happened.
We felt like, you know, we weren't going to be able to punt it too many times today. You know, we felt like that we had to try to manufacture some points, manufacture some yards, and just didn't work out. You know, it's just something we decided to do, but the play didn't work.
I got to give Andy Reid a lot of credit. No panic from Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy. No panic from anyone on that staff when they were down big. Andy Reid had confidence that they'd come back.
We had drop balls and a couple missed tackles and then drop on the punt return. So we had the block on the kicks on the punt there, so for a score. So, I mean, these are things that that's not us. And it was just a matter of everybody kind of settling down and, you know, getting it right. So we did that.
Kansas City has advanced. They'll host the AFC Championship game, and they deserve to do it against the Tennessee Titans. And we go to the late game on Sunday where the Packers hosted the Seattle Seahawks, and that was another really good game. Green Bay dominated that game early. They were up 21-3 at the half as Aaron Rodgers was making plays, and they were running the ball behind Aaron Jones.
Slot right. They stacked the two receivers on the right side. Here's the give, Aaron Jones to the end zone. Touchdown, straight ahead run. They carved up a beautiful hole off left guard, and Aaron Jones' second touchdown of the night gives the Packers a 20-3 lead.
Packers radio on the call. So they got a great running attack with Aaron Jones. They got a great running attack. They got one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And now Devontae Adams at wide receiver is turning out to be one of the premier wide receivers in all of football.
Fake to Jones. Rodgers deep drop looking. Pops it over the left side. Devontae wide open. Outside the numbers 20. Cuts it back right past Flowers. 10 to the 5. To the end zone. High stepping. Touchdown. Devontae Adams. 40 yards.
Impressive to see that go down. So those were the big moments in the Packers game. After that, Aaron Rodgers, he had to put the game away with his arm. He was able to do that. They closed out that game beautifully.
It's a special feeling. That's kind of what we talked about in the huddle before the last drive. These are the moments that you work for and you think about in the offseason, the chance to put a game away. And like I've said, you know, most of the year, as you guys have talked about, the aesthetics of our wins, it doesn't have to be pretty, but what we've done is closed out games the right way.
So next weekend is the big weekend in Vegas, maybe my favorite weekend of the year as a football fan. The AFC and the NFC championship games, Kansas City, Tennessee, and the 49ers host Green Bay. Winner move forward to the Super Bowl, loser go home. I am shocked that Baltimore got annihilated the way they did. I was amazed at the performance by the 49ers. I think Green Bay is a better matchup with the 49ers because they're healthy, and Seattle is just decimated. And Kansas City, I mean, if you told me right now, give them the Lombardi Trophy, they're the Super Bowl champs, I would agree with you. I don't see anybody beating Kansas City as of right now. The 49ers have the defense that can possibly do it with some offensive weapons. The only thing that Fox doesn't want to see is Tennessee in the Super Bowl. Fox and the sports books, no one wants to see Tennessee in the Super Bowl. I don't mind. I watched a game with Eddie George. Real quick story. I got a great invitation from my buddy Jamie Fritz, who's the agent for great running backs, Jerome Bettis and Eddie George and super legends and Hall of Famers and Tim Brown and Joe Theismann. Just great guys. The great Ronnie Lott and Rod Woodson. So he invited me to watch the game with him at Caesars, and I show up, and there's Eddie George. And I watched the Titans game with Eddie George, Mr. Titan. It was surreal. It was so intense to sit there and watch him react to his team winning as he was in Vegas, smoking a cigar, watching the game. Really cool. One of the cool experiences I had. I was going to watch the first game, and I'm watching the first game with Eddie, and then the Titans game's coming up next. Like, I can't leave Eddie George. I got to watch this game with him. And we had a blast at Caesars at Monte Cristo's, the cigar bar there. And I didn't partake because I'm sounding like Ed Orgeron trying to get rid of this chest cold over the last week or so. But it was a lot of fun watching all of these games this weekend. A lot of fun. And I think the better teams advanced. Other than Baltimore. I thought Baltimore was the better team, but we see that every few years where one seed doesn't play through the bye week. For whatever reason, they shut it down early and it comes back to haunt them. The college football championship is going to start here at the top of the hour. Joe Burrow won the Heisman Trophy for LSU. This has got to be the biggest game of his life. He's played great the entire year. No doubt about Joe Burrow. Winning the Heisman Trophy, he's been nothing but dominant and outstanding. But this is a different game for him. There's a lot of pressure for him to play the way he's played all year.
I'm going to have to be on my game, reading the safeties, reading the coverages, seeing blitzes, knowing what coverage they usually like to play behind it, but then verifying it post-snap to make sure that it is what I thought it was. And you know, that's going to be a key for us.
All right, we'll get to Ed Orgeron coming up a little bit later on this hour. Also, we have Eric Allen, who's going to join us, the former Raiders great Pro Bowl cornerback. We're going to talk to him. Mike Pritchard is going to jump in, the former wide receiver who you always hear about. He's always in Vegas. My good friend Pritch will join us sometime next hour, and we're going to get great reaction to the NFL with your calls at 876-1340 is the number. Mark Anderson will join us at the bottom of the hour, as he does every Monday, Mondays with Mark, as we'll take a look at the resurgence of Rebel basketball. What's going on with the Running Rebels? How have they found this energy and the ability to play great on the road and at home? And are you buying in Vegas? Is this the right time to jump back in with this team? Coming off all the football, the national championship game tonight, why not come out and support the Rebels at home and do the right thing? Playing Rush again. Still hurting on Neil Peart passing away. No doubt about that. Hope everybody had a good weekend. The monologue brought to you by the Henderson Hyundai Superstore, Boulder Highway in Henderson. If you're looking for a new vehicle, it could be a crossover, a luxury vehicle, the award-winning Hyundais, and the best financing team in the entire valley. Go see Frank and his crew, Boulder Highway in Henderson.
Delman to Hardy in the corner to Antonio. A three for Jonah. In and out and back in again. Jonah Antonio's hit a couple threes in the overtime. Rebels back out in front by six with a minute 20 to go.
John Sandler on the call, running Rebels basketball. JT back with you. We'll get you ready for the national championship game coming up at the top of the hour. Coming up next, former Raider legendary cornerback, also played for the Saints and the Eagles, Eric Allen joins us on Mondays. Looking forward to talk to him, but it's Mondays with Mark Anderson and his column, True Grit, Rebels Rally Past the Cowboys. And Mark, that was a big win. Talk us through the ebb and flow of that game. That could have been an ugly loss considering the Cowboys' record and what was happening in regulation in that game. Great that the Rebels were able to get it into overtime, then take over.
Yeah, about a minute and a half to go in the game, I thought it was over. You know, the UNLV was down 7, 125 to go, and they hadn't shown. It seemed like every time they did something positive in the second half, Wyoming answered, and you know, we found a way, and part of it is that Wyoming helped them. You know, they missed, you know, Wyoming missed its final 5 free throws. They make any one of those, they win the game. You could also argue that if Mbaki Jong doesn't miss a breakaway dunk, it's that's different too. So, but it's just, you know, I think it was a, I think it's something you see with UNLV football a lot, where a team that's struggling has a chance to close and doesn't know how. And I've seen that with UNLV football over the years, and I think that's what you saw with Wyoming, is they just didn't know how to close a game that they had won. And UNLV escaped, and they're 4-1 in the conference, and I don't know how many people would have forecast that going into conference play.
Yeah, I think that is great. I love talking about that. Rebels 4-1 along with New Mexico at 4-1, and obviously San Diego State in the year they're having, undefeated in conference here. What was working with the Rebels with rebounding the basketball? A big margin there of victory for UNLV in this game. Is this something that Coach O has been preaching here, or they just had height matchups and they were really taking care of the fundamentals?
I think both are correct. I think it's something that's worked well, worked in their favor. Rebounding's been one of their strengths, and it's especially offensive rebounding. You know, UNLV's been one of the top offensive rebounding teams in the country, and it's a major reason why they've been in a lot of these games, is they've been able to control the boards, and they've won, and defense and rebounding has really been their pathway to where they are right now, because they're not the greatest offensive team, as you saw even in the Wyoming game. They shot about 21-22% in the first half. I mean, that's, you know, really good offensive teams usually don't go that kind of stretch. So it's they've had to do it other ways, and so the games aren't always pretty, as this one wasn't. But they're finding ways to win these games in the end.
Mondays with Mark, we do it every Monday with Mark Anderson from the Las Vegas Review Journal. Bryce Hamilton led the Rebels with another big game, 19 points. Can you compare his game, for some of the listeners who haven't seen him play or haven't seen him play much, to a former Rebel of the past, or just kind of compare him to other athletes and what his upside is?
Yeah, he has the body of what you think would be an outside shooter, but he's not. He's a penetrator. That's always been his game. If you go back and watch his high school videos clips, he was always driving to the basket and dunking and finishing around the rim, and that's what he's not really able to get to the rim and dunk so much with UNLV just because of the size problems. But he's able to get around the rim and use his athleticism to be a real problem, even for guys who are taller than him, and really to really help complete Osberg's offense, because this isn't a player you thought would fit into Osterberger's offense before the season. He took a lot of mid-range shots early in the season, and Osterberger hates that. But he's not really stopped doing that. He just doesn't do it as often now. And so that shows you the coachability, too, that he's listening, and he's really taking to heart what kind of offense they want to run out there. And he doesn't have the outside game, and that's something that he's still – if he could develop a decent three-point shot – he'd be really tough to stop. And so that's the one thing that's really, still really holding him back.
Mark Anderson's our guest. I want to look at the upcoming schedule. San Jose on Wednesday night at home, New Mexico before at Nevada, then San Diego State on the 26th. How important is this stretch here? Everybody in this conference is battling hard. There are a couple of surprises. Everybody's looking up at San Diego State. How important is the San Jose State game to keep the momentum going heading into New Mexico when they have that Reno game right behind it?
Yeah, the one thing they've done a really good job of the past few games at home is feeding off the Thomas and Matt crowd, and that's something they'll need to do again Wednesday, because it could very well be a trap game. You would hope that after Wyoming that kind of got their attention, they just can't show up and expect to beat a bad team. And San Jose State's has played above expectations, so this isn't a team that UNLV should take lightly. If they can go and win this game, and they really should, if they play up to the way they played mostly during the stretch, they should win this game and go to 5-1 in the conference. That would be huge with the games they got coming up. I knew New Mexico's got some turmoil now with Carlton mm-hmm. Bragg being dismissed and some other issues going on there in the locker room, but it's still a very talented team. as you mentioned, you got UNR and San Diego State right after that. So it's not going to get easier. So if they don't take advantage of this opportunity on Wednesday, then they put themselves in a real big problem as far as trying to finish up near the top of the conference. But if they can win Wednesday, then maybe they can steal one or two of those games. And I think I really like their chances against New Mexico. That three game stretch, that's the game I like most for them to try to win. So they have a chance to really make a strong statement in conference play as it's starting to near the midway point.
And finally, I would think the program would be pretty optimistic for a decent night, a walk-up, and the attendance going up after the way they've been playing as of late and the fact that the Golden Knights are out of town. Is this something you'll be talking about here over the next couple days?
Yeah, I'm still not convinced they're going to draw a great crowd for San Jose State. I just don't think that's an opponent that really moves the needle. New Mexico on Saturday is the game I'm really interested in, especially if we can beat Spartans. You know, what kind of bump in attendance is there for a Saturday mid-afternoon game where fans can go and still have their night together? There's no NFL on Saturday. There's really no conflicts. And you would think that would be a game, and New Mexico is one of the bigger rivals. You would think that would be a game that fans, especially if he's 5-1, fans would be excited to see. And so that's the one I have more of an eye on. And if they can beat New Mexico, then, a week after that, you get San Diego to stay here. And there's no reason why there shouldn't be a pretty good crowd for that game.
No doubt about it. We'll have a lot to talk to you about next Monday with that schedule coming up. Thanks so much, Mark. Have a great week.
You too, JT. Thank you so much.
You got it. Mark Anderson joining us from the Las Vegas Review Journal. If you look at these games, other than the Boise State loss, the win against Air Force, the win against Utah State, which was enormous. They were great that night. Eastern Michigan. Before that, Robert Morris. This is the time now where I think Coach O reined that team back in. He was really tough on them. The discipline needed to come down. The hammer needed to come down. He got everyone's attention, and now they're doing great things. But they could have lost. They could have lost to Wyoming. They needed to get that game into overtime. They did. Unfortunately, they were outstanding in overtime to get that record up, and they're having a great start to this year in conference. Man, San Diego State's bringing a lot of attention to the Mountain West with that 17-0 start, and that's good for the conference. It's putting eyeballs on the conference, and every time they take the court undefeated, I think the media is going to be talking more about the Mountain West. Clemson warming up in their own end zone. LSU took the field for warm-ups when they left. Ed Orgeron ran them off the field, and it sounded like a earthquake in that building. The LSU fans are louder. There's more of them there. Can Clemson win? That game starts a little bit past the top of the hour. I'll walk you through that during the last hour of our show. Also, Mike Pritchard will join us. He was teammates with Eric Bieniemy. Eric Bieniemy called the plays in that Kansas City comeback and did not get a college job, which was shocking to me. Before we come back, Eric Allen is going to join us next. I am furious. I'm really upset about what happened to Tom Flores. My friend Tom Flores is a god throughout the Raider Nation, and he was snubbed again for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The NFL and the Pro Football Hall of Fame decided to surprise Bill Cowher on Saturday on the set of the NFL on CBS, and then they decided, was I the only guy in the country knowing that they were going to do the same thing with Jimmy Johnson on Sunday? On the NFL on Fox, you knew that was coming. I have no problem with Jimmy Johnson getting inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He has two Super Bowl rings, just like Tom Flores. But for Bill Cowher to get into the Hall of Fame and Tony Dungy to get into the Hall of Fame before Tom Flores is an injustice to my friend Tom Flores and the Raider Nation. It's an absolute slap in the face to the late Al Davis. It's a slap in the face to Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders now, and Tom Flores is 82 years old. I was looking so forward to attending the ceremonies in Canton, Ohio this summer with the Flores family, who rightfully deserves their spot in Canton, Ohio. And Coach Flores has taken the high road throughout this whole process. You've heard him with us exclusively on the radio talking about this and taking the high road when he doesn't get in. And this was his chance with the seniors, with this special 100-year class, where he rightfully deserved to get in. So I think there's a conspiracy that the NFL knew about this. They leaked it. They decided to do it on TV to make it a made-for-TV event. How do you think Coach Flores felt sitting in his house in Palm Springs, California, looking on TV, watching two coaches get into the Hall of Fame as he still waits? I was so upset the entire weekend. I was so upset through my soul for Tom Flores for the way he is treated by the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He has four Super Bowl rings. One as a player, as a backup quarterback for Kansas City. One as the assistant coach for John Madden at Super Bowl XI, where he was a major part of that team. And then a two-time Super Bowl champion as a head coach for the Raiders. The first Latino quarterback of all time. And the first Latino head coach to win a Super Bowl. You cannot tell the story of the Pro Football Hall of Fame without Tom Flores. How dare you do that to that man again? And on Wednesday, we were waiting for Cliff Branch at Wednesday morning at 7 Pacific in the morning for Cliff Branch's induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And Cliff passed away this past year, and he's not here to see it. When we come back, Eric Allen will join us, the famed corner, six-time Pro Bowler. We'll get a recap of these NFL games and his opinions on what's going to happen next. Your phone calls at 876-1340. I'm a bit fired up. I'm really pissed off. Really upset, pissed off for Tom Flores and the Raider Nation, who got jobbed once again. Stop this injustice. It must stop.
These games were always, you know, games with momentum, momentum swings. You know, we had momentum at that point. Just felt like, you know, we were going to try to make a play there, and it just didn't work.
Bill O'Brien on the botched fake punt that I think cost Houston the game, but maybe they still would have lost. They couldn't stop Kansas City in the second half of the game. John McClain will join us next hour from the Houston Chronicle. He's fabulous. Can't wait to talk to him. But joining me now is Eric Allen, the former six-time Pro Bowler, legendary cornerback, who had a great run, especially with the silver and black. EA, good to talk to you again. And walk me through that fake punt. Was that Bill O'Brien just out of his mind? What was he thinking?
I'm okay with the call, but you got to go quick snap. You can't allow that defensive backfield and those outside guys, particularly Sorensen, to kind of sniff out what you're doing. So, again, I like the call, but it has to be quick snap. You got to catch him off guard, and then maybe you have a better chance of making him miss in the open field. But once you kind of motion and you set it up, now it's too late. Sorensen makes an outstanding play along with several plays that the safety made today to give his team a great chance to win the game.
Eric, you've been a part of some great comebacks. You've been on the other side with some tough losses, with big leads. The question I have is, what is going through Houston's mind as Kansas City is mounting this comeback? Because Houston has Deshaun Watson, and they have Hopkins and good players who are supposed to get the ball back and score and try to stop the momentum of Kansas City. And once Kansas City got rolling, Houston couldn't get their offense going again.
Yeah, JT, this is the worst kind of loss for you. Divisional playoff game, you're up so high, you have everything going, momentum's on your side, and you're not really able to stop the tie because of the special teams plays that really got you behind the eight ball. You get a couple big-time special team plays going against you, you give the Chiefs short field, they're able to kind of get it done, so you never really have that chance to get that lead and run the football, get that clock on your side, force the Chiefs in some bad situations. Again, football in the playoffs, it's all about the three levels of football, offense, defense, and most importantly, special teams. You lose a special teams in the not just one, but two big-time plays, there's no way you're going to be able to come back from that, especially when Mahomes got hot. Him and Travis Kelce kind of balled out. But again, those short fields from that special teams plays gave the Chiefs that great momentum. And you know, you've been in Kansas City before. You know those fans go crazy once they get the lead. They're right behind your bench. They're yelling at you. They're shouting your name. You don't want to turn around. But the Chiefs, again, with that great momentum and that great special teams play, were able to get back into the game. So right now, if you're a Houston Texan, it's just a big question mark in your head. You're like, what happened? I shouldn't be here right now. I should be getting ready for the AFC Championship game.
Eric Allen is our guest, the great corner, the legendary corner. Got to give a lot of credit to Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid. They did not panic. They stuck with their game plan, especially with that explosive play to the tight end. You mentioned Kelce. Doesn't seem like many teams in this league know what to do with him, EA, to hit him off the line of scrimmage, to try to collapse a zone pocket around him. He still finds way in the red zone to get open, and no one puts a hand on him.
Yeah, without a doubt. Johnson tried to match up number 32 with the Houston Texans, tried to match up with him man-to-man, and early on, the drop balls, you're thinking, hey, man, you know what? He's dropping the balls a little bit. I'm handsy with him a little bit. I can be physical a little bit. But what eventually happens is Kelce starts to work against your technique. And what I mean by that is if you have outside leverage, knowing you have a deep safety, you're going to be outside leverage. Kelce's going to take off and jab like he's going inside. He's going to get you to overcommit. Then he's going to bounce back outside. And he's so fast for a big guy. And now you have a quarterback who can pretty much put it wherever he wants to. Now you're in a disadvantage because the safety's inside, you're inside, and big Kelce is outside. So, again, he did a great job of reacting to what you were seeing earlier in the game. Double team late, but early on, it was man-to-man. He was just beating leverage. So it's really disappointing for a defensive back, knowing all week long, you're like, I'm going to take this guy out of the game. I'm going to use my outside leverage. I'm not going to peek into the backfield. But when that ball is snapped and you see big Kelce trying to reach inside and he works against you, he did a great job of really coming back from those drops early, making big plays for his football team.
Seattle outscored the Packers in the second half 20-7. Green Bay had an 18-point lead in the second half, but Russell Wilson kept charging back and making plays with his legs. But, Eric, I wanted to talk about the play of Aaron Rodgers. Those third-down conversions were incredible. Vintage Aaron Rodgers leading that team to the NFC Championship game.
You without a doubt, JT. And earlier I was talking to guys about all I wanted to see was the old Aaron Rodgers. I wanted to see the game come down to a last possession, Aaron Rodgers having the ball and being able to make big plays so we can see the old Aaron Rodgers making it happen. And, of course, he did. Third down, making a huge play to his receiver, just a great touch. He, again, technique-wise, the defensive back wasn't in a bad situation. It was just that Aaron Rodgers' throw was picture perfect, great accuracy over the shoulder where no one can get it except this guy. And then you come back with an outstanding play across the middle to his tight end and just a great throw under the rest, being rushed in the middle, little foot with the wrist, and the ball was right there. Continued to get the third down and make it a first down and basically take the game away and not give the ball back to Russell Wilson. Because, again, we all know what Russ can do with the with time on the clock, with him under a touchdown to lead his team to score. I thought, again, whichever quarterback had the ball needed to make those big plays, and Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, a little cold, was able to make it happen for his football team.
Eric Allen joins us. Eric, look, Jimmy Garoppolo, they look great. There was no rust on the 49ers when they came out. And the team speed, the defense, the way they run to the ball, the edge rusher, especially Nick Bosa, everything they're doing and their nickel package. I wanted you to talk to our listeners about the Niners defense and their scheme, because we fall in love with Garoppolo and what they're able to do with the offense. But I think that defense is the strength of the franchise, especially the way they run. They're the fastest defense I've seen in quite some time.
I'll tell you what, I'm laughing because it's great to look at that defense, because up front, they're just so fast and physical, and everyone seems like they're giants. Everyone seems like they're 6'5", 300 pounds. They have, you know, the 6'7", arm stretch, big arms, and they continue to get after you. And then after all that, they got the old man sitting in the rocking chair back there and Richard Sherman just watching the quarterback, waiting for him to make mistakes, and he capitalizes. D Ford and them boys in the middle of the football field, they do a phenomenal job. They're long all up and down at defensive line. The defensive linebackers are running to the football. They're fast. They're physical. They're athletic. And then on the back end, they got great ball skills. So, again, when you look at the 49ers, yeah, we talk about Jimmy G, we talk about the tight end and all those guys, but it really comes down to, can you beat this defense consistently with their different packages? And that's what I love about this defense. They're going to throw different packages at you. They're going to put 7-8 guys at the line of scrimmage. Guys are going to back out. They're going to rush four. And with the boast of speed, his great athleticism, and so many great pass rushing moves that they have. Armstead and the rest of the boys, they just do an outstanding job of executing defenses. They're physical. They're fast. Love to see this defense play, and it's going to be an outstanding game against the Green Bay Packers.
Wrapping it up with Eric Allen. Eric, finally with the Ravens, it hurts for Lamar Jackson, the MVP this year, running away with it. He was incredible, as good as anything we've ever seen from a running quarterback, but Derrick Henry's at a different level. I was watching the game with Eddie George, Mr. Titan, and you know, he was a pretty good guy and a great player and hard to tackle, but Henry's different. When you're in the secondary, EA, and you see someone like that running towards you, what's your mindset like to get that guy on the ground?
You're screaming, JT. I'm telling you, before the game, in the locker room, you got about three or four sets of pads. You know, you got your run and shoot pads where you're not going to make any tackles. You got your balance pads where maybe, you know, we're going against a West Coast offense. And then you got your big boy pads. The pads you wear when you have a guy back there who's going to run it down your throat. I didn't have those pads, JT. So if I saw big Derrick Henry running, I'm calling for Eric Turner. I'm calling for Anthony Newman. I'm calling for those safeties and those linebackers to find a way to get that big guy down, because I don't want to be in the way of that guy. I don't want to sacrifice the cover skills to tackle that big guy. He's just done an outstanding job. 195 yards rushing. Well, the quarterback only had 88 yards, and they looked like they could have continued to run. I thought that if they played that game 10 times, the way the Titans were playing, they'd have beat out 10 out of 10. Great credit goes to the coaching staff, getting that team ready. They were physical. They didn't bow down. They tackled Lamar. They made sure they played with the lead and forced Lamar to try and win from the pocket, and he just couldn't do it. Balls are rattly. Guys are dropping balls. Just physical play on defense and physical play on offense. Won the line of scrimmage. The Tennessee Titans are for real. And I tell you, Mike Vrabel should be getting some love for Coach of the Year, the way to make that change at quarterback and then have this team go on this great run.
What do you think of Lamar Jackson having all that time off? He put up big yards in a game that was never really close, so not everybody's going to blame him for that. But, EA, he was not sharp early. Do you think the bye week, you've been in that position before, did the bye week hurt this team and them in hindsight? Should he have played him all the way through the postseason through the bye week?
JT, that's a great question, and I think so, because he's a young quarterback, and it's very easy to lose that connection, that rhythm with your receivers, with your tight ends. Okay, so the tight ends play a very important role in this Baltimore Ravens offense because they do a great job with the RPOs and the running game. So once you don't have your big running back who's healthy in Ingram, now it comes down to he has to make plays from the pocket with his tight ends, and just that week off, because he's still a young guy. He's, you know, barely 21 years old. 22 years old, whatever it is. So, again, he needs that rhythm and that repetition over and over with those receivers to be able to win from the pocket. And I really do think that week off helped hurt them a little bit as far as seeing that live coverage, that live defense coming at you, and be able to put the ball exactly where it needs to be. So, again, another learning experience for this football team. And, again, I think John Harbaugh, again, may be back on the hot seat like he was a couple years ago.
EA, great to talk to you, especially after the divisional playoffs. A big week with the AFC and the NFC championship. You've been down that road. We greatly appreciate your analysis. Thank you, my friend.
Anytime, my man. Take care, guys.
Anytime for you, EA. Eric Allen. When we come back, the Astros are confirmed cheaters now, and they've wiped out a bunch of jobs today. You won't believe this update, and the national championship is on deck. Big second hour brought to you by PT's.